Oh, hello, everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. And, excuse me, we are funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, which has been supporting writers all the way from pen to publication since 1955. Our 60th Writers Conference is coming up this weekend, starting Thursday, July 16th. For those of you who are keeping track, I will be there, most definitely. I know the registration is closed, but if you're really desperate, they'll be taking registration, walk-in registrations, if you're so inclined. Also, I should point out that on Sunday, the last day of the conference, I will be teaching a two-hour workshop from 10 a.m. till noon on confidence. A writer's confidence, and this is actually open to the general public, although there is a charge for it. But if you did not sign up for the conference, but you're in the Seattle area and you'd like to come down to SeaTac, the SeaTac Hilton, and take part in that workshop, you can do that. So I think you need to sign up for it through the PNWA. So you can go to PNWA.org and learn about that. And I hope I see you there. Say hello to me if you do go to the conference. All right, writers' conferences. Today, my guest, well, Tara Austin Weaver has done so much in what seems like so little time. I it would take me too long just to describe it all, but I will tell you that she comes from the publishing industry. She's worked at a literary agency and publishing houses. She's written numerous books, including The Butcher and the Vegetarian, which got mentioned in Newsweek and on New York Magazine's Grub Street and in Entertainment Weekly and USA Today and Redbook and Women's Wear Daily. Good Lord. She also writes a wildly popular blog, Tea and Cookies, which has been recommended by the Food Network and has also been mentioned by both the Times of London and the Independent of the UK as one of the 50 best food sites in the world. Good God. She's also, by the way, the editor-in-chief of Edible Seattle and the author of a new memoir, a brand new memoir, Orchard House, How a Neglected Garden Taught One Family to Grow. Good Lord, that's a lot. Can't wait to talk to Tara, so I think I'm going to do it. Tara, welcome to the show.
Hi, Bill. So nice to be speaking with you.
It's good to be speaking with you, too. You know, you and I met talking about blogs on a panel at Bookfest. Do you remember that?
We did. Yes, we did.
That was several years ago. I seem to end up on panels with food writers all the time. I don't know how that happens because I'm not a food writer.
It's because you're lucky.
clearly. And I do love food. But I've thought about this, Tara. I thought about you today as I was getting ready for the show. And I've decided that what you are is a bon vivant. What do you think of that? You're a bon vivant. You are an adventurous lover of life. Would you say that so?
Maybe I'm trying. I don't know. I think I was definitely raised with in a time and place that had sort of a spirit of adventure, and it's taken me different places. But I don't know. Bon vivant sounds, it's an adventure. There's also a lot of work involved, and bon vivant sounds like people who don't work.
That's right. And you are a worker. There's no doubt about that. You're a hard worker. But you do like to sink your teeth into the world. You're interested in, I mean, obviously your book's about that, literally putting your hands into the earth. But you're very interested in the physical world, in exploring it and learning about it.
True. And I think it probably comes partially from personality and partially how I was raised, but also, you know, I started out as a journalist, and journalists by nature, I think, are curious people. And, you know, I was also I did grow up in spending time in other countries. And, you know, that's just a quirk of luck or fate. But I do have a extreme curiosity about how people live and life and different cultures. And I think that, you know, for me, the great joy of the career that I've managed to cobble together is that I get to explore a lot of that in my work.
All right. Now, teach me about that. Why do you care how other people live? Who cares? Let them live their life.
Oh,
I just
find it fascinating. I think.
Why? Why? What's fascinating about it? What is so cool?
I think that it probably comes from how I grew up and sort of always feeling like I don't really fit in. And, I mean, when I was young, I think that that led to, you know, an intense curiosity because I needed to figure out how other families worked and how life worked because I sort of come from, I mean, I guess they used to call it a broken family, but my father left when I was quite young, and my mother also is sort of the product of her own broken family. Her mother died when she was 3 in childbirth with her younger sister. So I sort of felt like growing up, like, we were just kind of holding things together. Like, we weren't doing it the right way. Maybe the neighbors were doing it the right way, maybe the people down the street, but I needed to figure out how life worked because I was really clear that we didn't have the answers. So I think that that you know, really is a great setup for a writer, really, truly, to become a student of human nature. And I think that the most interesting people I have come across in my life are people who don't fit in for whatever reason, you know, whether they're, I mean, maybe they grew up gay or they, you know, grew up cross-culturally and you know, there are any number of scenarios. But I think that when all the pieces fit, you don't actually have to sort of probe the universe for answers. But when they don't, that leads you to wonder, you know, how it's supposed to fit, or is it supposed to fit, and how are these people making it fit? So I think that you know, it again, a bit of circumstances beyond my control, but it does make for a great, you know, just the intellectual curiosity of a writer.
Yes, what you said there, you know, I always think of writing as, it's really, I feel like when I teach workshops, some of the fears the students have is they're not smart enough, that sometimes I'm not smart enough to be a writer. That's a sort of common, one of the stories people tell themselves to keep themselves from writing. And what I've come to understand about writing is our job is really to not to have the answers, but to ask questions. We ask questions and we're supposed to be interested in the questions. And I was thinking of that as I listened to you talk about wondering how life works. How does it work? How does it work? And do you think, now this is a kind of a philosophical question, but you're a philosophical gal. Does anybody think they fit in? Do you think anybody really feels like an insider, or does everybody on some level, are we all trying to figure out where we fit in? Even the captain of the football team.
Well, I think that's a good question. I think that people exist on a spectrum. And definitely some people are born into scenarios that do, you know, give them more security than others. And I have friends who, you know, have farmhouses in their family that have gone back for generations, and there's just a very clear way of how to do things. Of course, that's a great thing to rebel against, because the people who are born into it don't necessarily love it. But, you know, I have a longing for that sort of tradition and, you know, ritual.
So,
and it's something that I have always in my, ever since I was a very, very little girl, have been trying to create, really. And and it was interesting in writing Orchard House because I, you know, had to go back and evaluate and sort of look at the archaeology of my life and look at some of those early longings, because the book is really about, you know, about family and about finding home and creating that and creating community. And, you know, we do it very metaphorically in the story through a garden, but that was, you know, I do think some people get more in that category. They probably don't appreciate it, or maybe don't even want it, but I do think that there is a spectrum.
Yeah. You know, there's a quote, and I can't remember it exactly, by James Joyce, where he said, I'm going to botch this a little bit, but he said basically any family, state, religion, culture, anything that does not serve my soul's journey is not to be a part of me. Needs to go. I need that in the end, you're on your journey. And so some people maybe get born into this great, rooted tradition. They think, I cannot grow here. This is a garden that I can't, and other people need. And I wonder for someone like you that really you couldn't have asked for a better beginning for a writer than this supposedly fractured world, because it stimulated so much longing and so many questions. I had a friend who said, I don't know if I can be a writer, Bill. My childhood was so normal. It was so, I was happy. I don't know if I could be a writer. I told him he could be, but does that make sense?
Yeah, well, I don't think that unhappiness is a prerequisite for being a writer by any means.
No.
But I, people like to talk about the tortured writer. I do think that, it's a mental curiosity, really, more than anything else. And, one thing that I really did sort of get as a bonus of my childhood is that we spent time in other cultures. And you learn really quickly that whatever way you think it's supposed to be right is not right in another place. So, I think always kind of, just looking at how the pieces fit together.
Yeah. Now the Orchard House, I write memoir, I teach a lot of it now, and there is a very familiar sort of story arc to most memoirs, which is a person coming out of darkness, moving through darkness into light of some kind. And it's true for yours as well. Can you describe, for those who haven't read the book yet, what that darkness is that you had to sort of, you found your way out of through, among other things, this garden?
Oh, the darkness. Well, this...
You need it.
The story, or the struggle, really, right?
Yeah.
I think that that's, for me, I think of it more as a struggle than darkness.
Right.
I'm sorry?
If everything was peachy, with everything was roses, you'd have no story to tell.
Yeah. And that's something that is, really interesting for me as someone who's, studying more and more about sort of fiction writing, is like you make these characters and you kind of have to mess them up even though you really like them.
Yeah,
right? Like everyone needs to sort of get in the mud and wrestle around a little bit in order to grow, which is a good thing to remember while going through difficult phases of life. I'm just in the mud right now. So the story of Orchard House is really, Orchard House is the name that we gave to this house that my mother purchased here in Seattle. And she bought it really because we fell in love with the garden. It came along with a half-acre, overgrown, neglected garden. It had been very well tended in a prior incarnation of its life, but it had been abandoned for about 10 years at least, and it was overgrown with blackberries, and there were actually fruit trees under there, but we couldn't even see them for all the blackberries. And the idea was that she would buy the house and move to Seattle, where my brother and I had both settled, and that we would work together to bring this garden back to life. And it would be sort of a multi-generational project with my mother, myself, and at the time I had two young nieces, and now I have two nieces and a nephew, and they were going to have their own garden plots. And it sort of harkens back to my childhood, which was spent in Northern California in the countryside, where we had a very large garden. And in other ways, my childhood was, a bit of a struggle in some ways as a single, single parent household. And my mom worked very hard to support us and also to grow our food, because she was very involved in the early organic gardening days. So the idea was that perhaps in this new garden, we could write a happier chapter and have a place for us all to come together, because we really had sort of scattered to the winds, and the fact that we were all going to be living within a 5-mile radius of each other was sort of a new and surprising turn of events, because I don't think that was, we're not one of those families that has, Sunday suppers together or gets together and barbecues. So yeah, and I mean, we're all very, very different and pretty strong-willed people. And the idea that we might do this project, well, we had you've read the book, you know how it turns out, but there are definitely some highs and lows along the way.
Oh, most definitely. But so it goes. And I was one of the things I was wondering as I was reading it, just as someone who writes things like this, is when did you say this could be a book? Because did you say, I need a book? Did you have some contract where they said, you need to give us a book, Tara? Or did you think, and you thought to yourself, well, what could I write about? As people do, as like you do with your blog, I'm sure. Or did you say, this has got to be a story? How did you come to the decision to write this?
You know, I, as of yet, I have never had the ideas for any of my books, actually. it's true. I hang out with some pretty clever people, and other people, you know, will hear me rambling about something and say, you have to write about that. And I go, I never thought of that. So in the case of my first book, it was actually a friend of mine who was a literary agent who read a piece that I had written on my blog, long, long, long piece, and picked out this one sentence and said, that's what your book is about.
Really?
And in the case of this, it was a dear friend of mine, Kim Ricketts, who was very influential and instrumental in the literary community and literary and food community here in Seattle. And we were out to dinner one night right around the time that we had found the property. My mom hadn't moved up yet, but I, you know, was telling her all about it and was all excited and animated. And she looked at me and she just said, you know, you have to write about this. And there you go. I mean, occurred to me.
But that was before...
Go ahead.
All that, but even before the thing had happened, even though before the story really had been lived.
Yeah, she mentioned in 2009, and I wasn't entirely, you know, oh yes, this can be my new book, but probably took me about a year and a half after that to submit the proposal. But she, you know, she planted the seed, and then, you know, and each of my books, actually, I have gone into it not really knowing how it ends because it hasn't been lived.
Oh, my God. Boy, so that's tricky, man, because, you know, time helps you gain some perspective on things, but you were really writing this thing almost as it happened. almost.
Well, yeah, I think so. I mean, with the first book, I actually had to email my editor at one point and say, we have a new ending because some things happened I didn't anticipate. And she just sort of laughed. She was like, that's different, but it's totally perfect. And this one, yeah, I mean, there were, and it was funny. I actually went back and added an extra chapter because towards the end, because some things had happened that just really, I mean, that's the thing that's amazing to me in writing these types of books. And I think this will be my last because I want to switch over and write some fiction, but really like arcs appear that you did not even intend and couldn't even have come up with because they're so lovely and they, you know, refer back to something that already happened and you're like, wow, look at that. How perfect.
Yeah.
But it is a little bit interesting. And I suppose it could have gone very haywire and wrong, I suppose, but in this case.
Listen to me now. Is you going to go write your fiction? That mysteriousness of creation where the thing you didn't plan suddenly, oh, look at that, all those pieces, I wouldn't have thought that, but that thing I put in chapter one, it was just what I needed in chapter eight. That is so common, and it is so necessary, I think, to learn to trust that will happen, particularly when you write fiction, because if you try to manhandle fiction, it'll blow up on you. You've really got to just let that imagination and the mysteriousness of it take flight some. You have to kind of give up the sense of control that you think you might have because you're the one supposedly making it all up. Does that make sense?
No, it makes perfect sense. And I think that that's sort of, you know, the lovely, surprising part of the act of creation or maybe collaboration. I don't know, sometimes it feels like it has a mind of its own.
Yes, it does. It is collaboration. That's exactly the right word. Even when you're writing about your own life, which is all I write about now, I absolutely feel like it's a relationship, not me just hammering things out.
Yeah. Which,
not,
you know, is interesting because I started out in journalism where you're very much hammering things out.
Yeah,
you know,
it's different.
You are crafting that story.
Yeah, yeah. It's different. Interestingly, Tara, one of the metaphors I used for a long time with writing was gardening, which is that my job is to create within me a sort of fertile field where I invite the story to grow. Like, as a gardener, you can't make the flower. You can't assemble it. You just create an environment where it can grow, where it will happen.
Right.
I feel like the same thing is true for my imagination. I want a fertile place within me that invites that new and interesting thought. But I can't make it all the way a gardener can't make a cucumber. You don't construct
a conducive environment.
Yeah, but it's within you. It's within the environment's
right.
Within you, within your heart or what. Okay, so you're moving on to fiction. Good Lord. So what a journey you've taken from journalism to nonfiction to blogging and now to fiction. Have you actually begun this process?
You know, I have a novel that I started when I was in graduate school.
Oh.
And it was, you know, part of my thesis, and I used it to apply to some things. And I put it on the way, way, way back burner a while back for a couple of reasons. One is because I need to go. It's set in Japan, where I lived for a number of years, and it's historical fiction. And I need to go back to Japan to do some research. There are just things that I cannot, you know, look up from a distance.
Right.
And I need to go and have some conversations and, you know, and really kind of immerse myself in that again with this project in mind, right?
Yeah.
And so that was sort of the, you know, the practical reason why I couldn't work on it. But as time has passed, what I've really also come to understand is that I wasn't ready to work on it. I feel like my skills as a writer and perhaps even as a human being in terms of what I had experienced up to that point in my life just weren't there yet.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, that I listened to a great interview with Juno Diaz, and you know, he had this short story collection came out that wowed everyone, and then everyone was, you know, waiting for his next book, and it took him 10 years to write his novel. And the interview that I saw with him was this guy who was like, Juno, dude, like 10 years, what was going on? And he was very, you know, sort of funny about it. But I love what Juno Diaz said. And he said, I needed to become the person the novel was asking me to be.
Right.
And I thought that
was
so beautiful. Because sometimes these things, you know, it is almost a growth process, and you do have to get to a certain point where you're ready to tell that story. I mean, with Orchard House, it's a very personal story. It has to do with my family, and I couldn't have written that 5 years ago. I couldn't have even looked back in the way that I had to write that story 5 years ago. Like, it really did require me to get to a certain point in my life where I was ready to go that deep. And I mean, maybe I could have tried to write the story, but it wouldn't have been as good because I wasn't ready for the deep dive. So I think that the novel has been one of those projects that needed to age or marinate or whatever the correct term is for it. But it's and the interesting thing is, I still, even though I'm not actively working on it, I am still having a relationship with it. And sometimes, you know, things will occur to me as I'm going for a walk and, you know, or a plot twist will, you know, make its way to the surface and where I think, oh my gosh, that is perfect. So even though I'm not even like trying to think about it, it just is always kind of bubbling there in the back of my mind.
Yeah.
So, it's an interesting thing. And I had to pull it out about actually right around the time that I was starting Orchard House. I had to pull it out because there was some research that I had written I only have 40 pages of it.
Right.
But there was some research that I had put in there that I needed to pull out for another project. And so I pulled it out. I read through the whole thing. And I haven't, at that point, I probably hadn't looked at it in 5 years.
Yeah.
And I read through it, and this is the most amazing thing. I wouldn't change a single word.
Really? Really?
Which, yeah,
wow.
I know. Shocking, right?
Wow.
Like, I mean, there are much more recent projects I've worked on that I would totally rewrite. But I read it and I sort of fell in love with it all over again. And so it feels like one of those, you know, sort of special projects. But need to carve out about 2 months to be able to go back to Japan. So yeah. I'm thinking that will probably happen next fall.
Oh, well, this sounds like a real humdinger. It looks like we have time for a caller to ask you a quick question. Let me see if we can get him in here. Jeff, is that you?
It is, Bill. Thanks so much for taking my question and another fascinating interview. Hi, Tara.
Hi.
I want to wish you unparalleled success, first of all, with your latest book, Orchard House.
Oh, thank you.
I've read your wonderful bio, and I was really, frankly, blown away at everything literary you're involved in and have accomplished. This leads me to my question for you. So many beginning writers have so much difficulty in juggling their busy lives to just find the time to sit down and write. Any advice you can give them, and hopefully for me too, we all suffer from this at times, which has helped you to be so phenomenally productive in your own writing?
Ooh, balancing life and right. How do you do it?
Isn't that the eternal struggle, really? So this is interesting. I was working on Orchard House. I was probably about 4 months away from turning it in, and I got an opportunity to step in as editor of a magazine. And I actually said no twice because logistically that just seemed like a stupid idea, but I was slowly talked into it. So there I was, you know, not just editing a magazine, learning how to edit this magazine and trying to finish a book. And I tell you, I've always thought that I struggled to fit it all in, but when you're working 16 hours a day, like, it is hard. So I completely understand that struggle. The benefit to me in that scenario is that I had a deadline and an editor in New York who had already bought the project and sent me a check who was waiting for it, and I was going to be in big trouble if I didn't produce. So I honestly, and this also comes from my journalism background, I'm a huge believer in deadlines because I'm not sure I would get all that much done without them. And I think deadlines can be self-imposed, but not necessarily just from yourself. Another great benefit and gift of this book, Orchard House, is that I worked on it with a writing group. And this writing group was unlike any I had ever been in. We met every other week, which is very, very frequent for I think writing groups meet monthly. But this was every other week. All of the three other members, who are all local writers here in Seattle, are, you know, full-time writers, and everyone's very professional. And what was amazing to me is to have, you know, it was such a great opportunity to get feedback from them because they're all excellent. And I didn't want to miss that chance to, you know, throw away that opportunity. So every 2 weeks I was turning up with a new chapter, which sometimes required me to, like, sit down on Sunday and just, you know, bang the thing out. But that, I think, meant that I finished this project a lot easier and faster than I would have otherwise. And actually, one of the members, Erica Bauermeister, said that her most recent book was written a lot faster because, again, we had these sort of built-in mini deadlines. So if you can set it up with friends, I mean, I've done it at different times with a friend of mine where she was really struggling to get work produced. So she said, can I just say that I'm going to send you something every Monday and you don't even have to open the file? It's just, you know, some accountability for myself. So, again, like, I'm a big believer of just working these things into your life. And the other thing that I would say, and I work now, it's funny to have been in the writing and editing world a while now, because all of a sudden you find yourself mentoring other people, which I don't know if you experience this, Bill, but I'm like, I'm still learning. How am I mentoring? but, you know, of course, people who are starting out, you know, once you've been around for a number of years, you definitely have things that you've learned the hard way that you can pass along. But what I always like to say, because this is a question that, you know, in different forms comes up quite frequently, and I would say I like to sort of turn it on its head, because I think that sometimes it's not that we're blocked. It's not that we can't find time for it. I think sometimes we're just scared.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes. I think that's what is, really. Honestly.
And that is part of the process of writing, I feel, is dealing with that fear of creativity. And it's a real thing, and it's a scary thing, and it should. I mean, you are bringing something into the world that has never existed before. And that's terrifying.
That's right.
And then you're showing it to other people, and
yeah,
then maybe you're publishing it,
I know.
And you're submitting it for critical review. I mean, this is
madness.
Really scary.
Yeah.
It is a little bit when you step back and look at it. So, you know, but what I have learned for myself is that, you know, that wrestling sort of with the monster and with the fear and with all of that is part of the writing process. It's not something you get over and that you get to go on and do the writing. Sometimes it's every time you sit down at a blank page.
Absolutely.
You have to go through that process.
I think you have to find it with every sentence you put on the page. I liken it to a gymnast finding balance on a balance beam. But fear is always waiting for you if you turn your attention to it. And so it's not a fixed point. You know, your fearlessness isn't a fixed point on a grid. It's something you find again and really with every thought, again and again
right.
and again. Because you can always think, this sucks. Nothing is ever going to keep you from thinking, this sucks. No one likes it. Who am I? Blah, 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 blah. Right? Nothing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think, I mean, like your gymnast example is kind of great because the more the gymnast finds that center, the
right.
easier and the faster they can get there.
That's why
so
I chose it.
So some of
That's
it,
right.
I mean, never, I don't think it ever goes away entirely, but
huh.
I know that, I mean, so this is sort of the third time I've gone through the publication process, and now I'm like, oh, there's that scary feeling of me wanting to run away and live in a cave because I have a book
right.
coming out and I don't want anyone to know that that's actually my book, right? Like
yeah.
you do sort of develop, you're like, oh, yeah, I've been here before. I survived it once. So
wow.
I think that it does get easier with time. But, yeah, I don't know that it entirely goes away because no. if it entirely goes away, it means that you're not pushing yourself into sort of new and uncharted territory.
Do you know what's going to go away completely? When you're dead.
What?
That when you're dead, that's when it'll go away completely. Until then, no, it's a part of being human. Oh, Tara, this has been awesome. This has been an awesome conversation. I'm so glad you came and joined me. The blog, which you are still moving along somehow in your busy schedule, is Tea and Cookies.
Well,
yes. Yes, no,
as
sorta,
much as kinda. I can.
All right.
Yes,
still
teaandcookiesblog.com.
Edible Seattle is the magazine, Edible Seattle. And the book is Orchard House, How a Neglected Garden Taught One Family to Grow. Available where all fine books are sold. Tara, thank you so much. I wish you the best of luck with this.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been a really lovely chat.
My pleasure. Take it easy. Oh, it's a good thing. Don't worry about the fear, people. It's just part of the process. Just part of the process. Okay, I'm going to be taking a couple weeks off after this. A little bit of a summer vacation, but I'll be back with Will North in a couple weeks. Until then, go do something you love. If it's gardening, if it's writing, if it's both, I don't care. Just do it. Love it. That's all that matters.